Hey, what's up, y'all? This is John Ryan Cantu, and this is the JRC Podcast. Thank you for joining me on another episode. Today, I have David Gomez, aka Dude Gomez, from Amigos TV on the show. David grew up similarly to myself. He's a pastor's kid, a kid who grew up asking a lot of questions about his faith. I actually know his dad probably a little bit more than I know him. His dad's an OG, awesome preacher. I got the opportunity to minister at his church a few times. But David now has a ministry focused on providing resources to help young Christian leaders in their ministries called Amigos TV. Be sure to check them out on social media. But this was probably my first and real conversation with David. I got to know him through this conversation, kind of hear how he thinks about the world, about God. He's a deep philosophical thinker, and I think that's one of the reasons that this podcast went almost 2 hours long. At about the hour 40 mark, you will hear a word that you probably don't want to have to explain to your kids just yet. So be warned. Other than that, I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Here's the show.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
All right. We're rolling. What's up, man?
What's up, John? What do people call you, John or Ryan?
You know,
I know you as Ryan.
They call me whatever I introduce myself as. So, I mean, usually I introduce myself as John because my first name.
Yeah.
But if I know, like, okay, this is going to be a long-term relationship, I'll say Ryan.
Yeah.
My family, my church, you know, knows me, Pastor Ryan.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. Some people just call me John Ryan. You can call me Ryan.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you as Ryan.
Only my good friends call me Ryan. And you, David Gomez, the second. Or the third? Or
I have, so my middle name's Emmanuel.
Okay.
But at home, like my church, my family, everybody calls me Dude.
Dude?
Yeah. Like okay. The people at my church call me Dude.
Okay.
It's a weird thing, but my parents have called me that forever.
So like they'll actually say, where's Dude?
Yeah.
Okay.
So or like, oh, the like Spanish
people. As a proper name. Okay.
They go, Dude. But yeah, like, hey, I'm looking for Dude. Yeah.
Okay.
And everybody knows, kind of everybody already knows. In my context that it's...
So if I go to your church and ask for Dude, they'll know
everybody
exactly...
Everybody will know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Well, that's cool, man. I appreciate you coming all the way from G-Town, Galveston. Yeah. We're doing this in person. This is... So you are my third guest, you know, relaunching the podcast and the first one that we're doing in person, which I always prefer.
Yeah, it's a little nicer.
Yeah, it's just... It's kind of figuring out the aesthetics and everything. Yep. You know, this used to be my studio, and now this is kind of like the ruins of it. The youth are kind of taking it over. I brought all my equipment home, kind of set that up. And so when you said you were down to meet in person, I was like, all right, let me try to figure it out how we'll do this. So I only spent a couple thousand dollars to set this up. Just kidding.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's cool to do it in person.
Yeah, man. Dude, thank you for having me and for putting in the work to do this. I'm sure like your community maybe doesn't even realize the work that goes into this, and having done a podcast previously, shout out to you, man.
Dude, it's wild, man, because like, it's not just having the conversation, it's the editing time. Now
the setup time. So that to me is the worst. So like you get an idea of like, oh man, I want to make a video. I want to make a podcast about this.
Yeah.
And then by the time you're done setting up, you wasted all your energy and time and you're like, dude, I'm over it. Like whatever it is that I have to say is not worth it for the time that I had to set up. So it's, like,
that's true.
I understand the struggle.
Yeah. So hopefully we can get some sponsors soon.
We'll that would be fire. Please somebody sponsor Ryan.
God, please. But what's up, man? So tell me a little bit about who you are, what you do, kind of what you're about, all that stuff.
Yeah. So my name is David. I'll be turning 36 next month. I'm a teaching pastor at my church. It's my home church where I grew up. I've been back here in Galveston about 5 years. I have a wife and three kids. Previously to that, my wife and I were in Venezuela for close to 3 years. Okay. So yeah, man, I just really into my family. I read too much, or I try to read too much. And then, just a teaching pastor. I spend a lot of my time doing that, thinking about moving the needle forward as far as theology and doctrine in our church. Through that, I've been preaching about 20 years. And so my Instagram account was Amigos TV, mm-hmm. and I knew that I wanted to build something out of that, not just like post pictures of my family and my food.
Right.
And so through that, we've turned it into like, right now, the only thing we have is a preaching course, but we're putting out preaching content, and then eventually we'll evolve to some more stuff, which we can talk about later. But yeah, so Amigos TV, we just are putting out preaching content, preaching courses to help young leaders teach and preach deeper, more biblical sermons.
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome, bro. So your dad, how long has he been pastoring?
Dude, my dad, he has been pastoring, I don't know the years, but he has been at our local church for 33 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a long time.
So he wasn't the founding pastor of that church.
He was not. Okay. But I mean, when we moved to Galveston, there was like 10, 12 people. Mm-hmm. So like, I mean, basically, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm sure you get asked a lot. Are you next in line? Is that, do you have a pastoral calling over your life?
You know, I don't know the answer to the second question, but I think growing up in a Hispanic church, like it's, you're kind of, kind of put on you. Yeah. Though my parents have been really good at like not pressuring us to. I think now that I've been back, that's kind of the assumption, but I know within me that, and I had a conversation with my parents about this not that long ago, that like, I don't think I'm supposed to take over. I don't think I'm gonna take over. Mm. I would love to continue to be the teaching pastor. That's kind of like, I've gotten into this spot and I'm like, oh yeah, this is it. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know that I have the energy or like the, I feel like what I'm about to say is the easiest way to say it, but it would maybe not make the most sense, but like, I don't think I have the personality to be a lead pastor.
Okay.
With what, everything that comes with that.
What do you think that looks like? What's the personality of a lead pastor?
So the personality that my dad has been as a lead pastor, not every lead pastor needs to have this personality.
Okay. Okay.
And I understand that, but I think the church, I think any organization leads is what it is because of the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And when a different sort of leadership happens, it doesn't function in the same way.
Yeah, for sure.
And so not only am I really different than my dad in personality and theology, but what I would want to build if I was a lead pastor would not look anything like the church that my parents have built.
Okay.
But I love the community, and which is why I'm there. And so I wouldn't mind continuing to serve it, not at that level, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I agree 100%. I mean, when I stepped into that role of lead pastor, the first thing I told the church was, "Hey, I'm not my dad.
Yeah, yeah.
Not my grandfather." You
did
know?
Did you feel pressure to do it?
No. I think because our situation was unique. You know, we started an English only ministry. We had always been a bilingual church. And then with the community kind of changing, we kind of saw the need, like, let's go all Spanish and all English. And so I came on as like the associate pastor to the English, or the English pastor. And so for 5 years I did that, and I had built, you know, kind of a culture.
Yeah.
And so when I became a lead pastor, I kind of still felt like I had to win over like that Spanish congregation. Yeah,
the hermanos.
And so maybe from them, I kind of felt that pressure, not so much from like the entire church, but there was still a little bit.
What was the hardest part in, would you say that was one of the hardest things, or what was the hardest part in taking over?
I think really just shifting the culture. Because that's
now, let's zoom in on that. When you say that, what does that mean? Right. Cause when you say that, it can mean a plethora of things, but when you say shifting the culture,
I think so. My heart has always been, look, let's become a church that looks like heaven. Right. And so, you know, especially for Hispanic churches, I mean, I think any demographic of people, we kind of like, we run to our own, right? And so that was one of the things, like, I didn't want to be known necessarily as a Hispanic church. I want to be a church multi-generational, multicultural. Yeah. So that's one. And then with that, I think comes a lot of things. Like, you have to kind of redo the way that you do church, right? If that's going to be your goal. My heart was really big on like the community, doing more things like intentionally, not necessarily like these one-off outreach events, but something that's going to go really deep. And so all of that, I think it was like a mindset shift, that we were going to begin doing things a little bit different because, you know, the intent is different. The goal is different. So I would say that. And then with that, obviously we did a name change. We kind of did a whole rebranding and all that stuff. So that was some other stuff too.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think that was the hardest part. Is, I mean, we're a pretty old church, pretty established, you know, 80 years. And so shifting the culture, you know, I always say, like, if you're planning a church, obviously I don't want to be a church planner. they have their own issues, but like you can move the culture fast. Like that, because it's like you're innovating it, right? You're starting it. But with a well-established church, you have roots.
Yeah.
Right? So,
and I think it's weird, right? It's like an unspoken thing, because I'm sure you felt this, like your parents and the church kind of want you to take over because they're like, oh, we need something new. We see.
Right.
But then when it comes to giving 100%. It to you, they're like, oh, no, but you can't do that.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
No, but yeah, we want you, but you can't do that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so like, I think my parents have done a really good job of, I like salute my dad for this, like making a ton, like not even now, but just always changing things.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing, like, being able to like see those things in the future of like, yo, let's make some of these tweaks. Let's make some of these changes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how we treat people. You know, like, people aren't just going to look at me as a pastor. Like, it's how I treat people, just like little things. And like, I love that. And I love our community, but you know, just some of the things I'm like, man, I don't know that I am built for that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I love your dad, man. Your dad is.
Yeah, he's the best.
Yeah, he's awesome, man. He brought us back when we had our band, the JRC band, greatest band of all time. And he brought us in like 2 or 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
He did some type of event. And so I've always appreciated him and his mentorship. He's an awesome.
He's the best.
An awesome dude. You're the dude. You're the dude.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's cool, man. So that's your background. So you've basically always been in
church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever had those moments as a, you've been PK pretty much all your life too.
My whole life, bro.
All right. So, I mean, I'm talking to a fellow, right? PK. Did you ever have any of those moments of like, you know, deconstructing and all that stuff?
Dude, I think I've always deconstructed. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean it in the sense of what that word means today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean it in the sense of like being critical about like the subculture of Christianity.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
I think that is a thing that we need to in itself talk about. Like, mm-hmm. I think Christianity in its purest form is wonderful and it's the best. But then the thing about Christianity is that it is a subculture, right?
Yeah.
So like, it isn't just what we believe, but it's like, you have to dress a certain way. Sure. You have to think a certain way. You have to act a certain way. You have to talk a certain way.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've always been able to challenge the subculture
without
having to challenge the belief.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. So there's like a Christian culture and then there's a church culture.
Exactly. Right? And so like, man, I credit it to the type of music that I'm into, but like since I was like 14, 15, I've always been like, yeah, why do we do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I've had like a long-term slow deconstruction versus just like, I feel like right now it's like you turn 22 and then you start deconstructing.
Yeah.
And like you, it's like super fast all right now mm-hmm. where like I've had like a long time of doing it that I'm like, I can handle the tension of what it brings, sure. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like there's this band that I grew up listening to called Bad Religion. It's like a punk band,
uh-huh.
but like the lead singer is like a PhD in biology and like all of their music is anti-God and anti-Christianity. Uh-huh. They have this really cool song called American Jesus. And it just like questions, like prods at Christianity. And like, I remember listening to it when I was like 14 and being like, yeah, these questions make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm like, let me wrestle with these things. And, I've always been able to do that or have always done that. But being able to also keep my Christianity, I didn't feel like it was like, oh yeah, dude, let me question these things. But then I have to question the whole thing.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so mm-hmm. I feel like I'm constantly doing that though.
Okay.
About everything too, though. Not just Christianity. Like, the older that I get and the more that I read, the more therapy that I'm in. Uh-huh. It's like, I've just always been the person that does the opposite of what people say or do.
Okay.
And it isn't because I want to, like, I'm not doing it on purpose, right. You know, it's just like, that's just who I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it like causes me frustration and causes others frustration. I can't say that word right now. Frustration. Because my parents are like, just put the pants on, you know, like just wear the thing. And yeah. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
And it's not just cause I want to be ridiculous. It's just cause like, that is just my nature, mm-hmm. you know? Okay. And there's been some wonderful things about that and some terrible things about that.
Yeah. I think I can relate to that. I was always the kid that would ask why, you know, yeah. why is it that we're doing that this way? Because a lot of times there was really no like real answer. It's like, well, we've always done it like this.
Yep.
That's not a good answer.
Not a good answer.
So, yeah. So I think
I'm sure you grew up this way. I would think tell me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. but like, for me, the worst sin was going to the movies.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Bro, I have a story. So, like, I remember going to the... I was 14 years old. I had a girlfriend here at church. And back then, we had a Sunday morning service, Sunday night service. And I remember going to the movies with her and, like, between services. And I was playing the keys, you
nice.
Know. And so we ended up getting to church Sunday night late. Because we went to the movie ran long or whatever. And so I was late to playing the keys. And I remember going to my dad, and my dad was like so disappointing in me. He was like, I don't even want to talk to you right now. And I remember like feeling so guilty. Like I was there at the altar crying, like that's repenting, so like, funny. Lord, forgive me for going to the movies. And yeah, so it's
yeah,
funny.
Same age, 14. Uh-huh. I went to the movies with my cousin and another guy, and like, dude, I was so happy because I'd never been able to go to the movies because it's like, you're going to go to hell.
Yeah.
And then I went and I was like, what the heck? The devil's not in here. Uh-huh. But then when I got home, like the devil was in my dad because he gave me the worst spanking I've ever gotten in my life. And I've dealt with that through therapy. So thank you to my therapist. But yeah, dude. But I've always been like, why? Mm. Like, why do we do that? And like, it's just what we do. It's not
right.
plenty. And even now, like, me and my dad joke about it all the time, and that's not the movies is not a thing anymore. I go all the time. But, like, their reasoning behind it was, like, this verse of, like, you can't sit in the seat of scoffers. Mm. But, mm-hmm. like, it's so out of context.
Right, sure.
And then on top of that, it's like, oh, so then don't go to restaurants.
Yeah. Yeah.
don't do anything at all, right? But... So yeah,
sure. No, I mean, I think we grew up very, very similar, and I think a lot of it was like just, I think it's just pressure, you know, from other people, from other Christians, you know, like if again, kind of going back to like that's the culture of church. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go against the culture of church.
And I think also a generational thing where our parents like, and then their parents as well, sure. they didn't question.
Yeah.
Right. Like, this is what it is. This is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It is what it is. And I think to everything there's good and bad. Mm-hmm. And that, like, I think there's also bad in the fact that we question everything.
Yeah.
But for our parents, they didn't question anything. Oh, my parents said this, the pastor said this, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah. Right? Well, I think like my daughter who's 8, I have 2 daughters, but this one is always, she's like me. She's like always, I feel like she's always argumentative about something.
Sure.
Like she wants to know why. And sometimes like, I don't have time to go into why. So I'm like, just do what I say. I'm your dad, yeah. you know? So like, I'm starting to hear, you know, like the previous generations in me, just like, shut up, just do it, you know? So I think it can be frustrating too. But like, you never want to turn anybody away who has genuine answers or questions, because then they're going to go somewhere else to get
exactly. And right. Ultimately it was that in me that led me to get deeper into my faith and deeper into theology.
Yeah.
Was not being satisfied with the answers I was getting about everything, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I had a moment actually sitting outside the church. So I was like 2 years away from like taking over as the lead pastor. And I just had a moment of, my faith wasn't being attacked, but the way that I believed about a lot of things, you know, it's even just being like a Pentecostal, you know, born and raised, like there was just a lot that I was dealing with. And I felt like I couldn't talk to, you know, Christians about
right.
it, especially, you know, the people in the church, because like, you know, I'll give you an example. Like there's things that, you know, I study in theology, right? So I'm pretty deep. I'm studying hermeneutics, my PhD. And so you learn a lot of things mm-hmm. that, you know, the average Christian doesn't really know, you mm-hmm. know, like the ancient Near Eastern parallels to the creation story of Genesis yep. and all that stuff. Like, so like, I felt like, I guess I felt alone. Like, who can I talk
yeah.
to these things about? And I was just having a moment and I finally told my wife, and I was actually crying because I was like, I feel like I'm going through something right mm-hmm. now and I can't express it with anybody else. And I mean, she's my wife, so I poured it into her, but it was an ugly feeling just because I felt kind of alone. And I think that, historically the church has kind of created like a taboo on certain questions,
sure.
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
For sure. I will say though, because just through reading, like, that's the case everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's just that not only is Christianity have a subculture, but then we're a part of an even crazier subculture being Pentecostals,
sure.
Hispanic.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
every subculture has that thing where it's like, oh, don't, but not that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, we don't ask that. Yeah. Or don't do that. And so like the more that I've read, the more that I'm going, oh, everybody does that. It's not mm-hmm. just us. 'Cause it yeah. can feel like, dude, if I was just Baptist, you know, that yeah. would not be the case, you know, or like, dude, I wish my parents would have like gotten a master's in theology and they would be old, but it's everybody yeah. everywhere. That is the case. I can just feel that way in those moments
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, and I got out of it. I mean, you know what was happening too during that time? I was listening to a podcast. Let me make sure this is still running. Okay, cool. It was a podcast where I can't remember the podcast, but I was listening to it like every week. There's this atheist. He brings on, you know, Christians and basically just challenges their faith, you know. And me being really into apologetics, you know, I started out listening to it because I wanted to hear, you know, the other side and the arguments and all that stuff. But I kept finding that these Christians were just falling short.
Yeah.
Right. And I think he was kind of bringing some low bearing fruit, you know?
Yeah. Do you remember that movie Religious by Bill Maher?
I never watched it, but I remember it. Yeah.
That's what it was. It was just like the dumbest people and he was like, oh yeah, well, what about this scientific thing? And it's just like, I don't think these people have ever read a book.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, I guess listening to that and kind of every podcast that I would listen to is like, man, atheists won again, you know, I don't know. It created something in me and I didn't like it, but it did lead me to more, you know, just deeper study.
Yeah.
And I don't question anything, you know? I mean, I, the things that I question, like, it's not like, oh, well, my whole faith falls apart. You know, it's not nothing like that. I was actually sharing with the church, this past Sunday, something that I probably wouldn't normally share because it's one of those things that you have to be careful what you say to certain Christians. But the passage was John 7:53-8:11, which is the story of the adulterous woman. So that text was not original to John, right? Mm-hmm. It was added later by a scribe. And it's not a secret. It's there in your Bible. It says, you know, earliest manuscripts do not contain this. But I shared it with him and kind of explained it. And I told him, like, these things, I think they make a lot of people question their faith or question the Bible. But like, when you realize that there's actually answers to these things, mm-hmm. like it makes you more confident in your faith.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And it's being able, I think this comes with age. I'm not sure. But I think in your 20s, like you either your early 20s, you feel like you know the answers to everything.
Yeah.
And you're confident about everything and everybody else is wrong. And then you start getting to like 27, 28 and you're like, I don't know anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And then hopefully you're reading and learning from other people that it leads you to a place where you can continue to ask questions without unraveling everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But in your 20s, that's not the case. You can't do that. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that is like a physical thing, but most Christians do not mature past their 20s in their Christianity, right? So like you feel like you're right about everything, but it's because you've still been stuck in the same Christianity that if you do question, it all unravels for you, but there needs to come a point, hopefully, that you mature that you can ask questions without it unraveling.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And that is a difficult tension to live in, mm-hmm. but it's one that I think we both have gotten to.
Yeah.
Where like I can read what's his name, like Bert.
He's
like, yes, Bart he's Ehrman. Like one of the leading New Testament scholars mm-hmm. that was a Christian, is not a Christian anymore, raises a ton of questions, and I can read him and go, okay, cool.
Yeah.
It doesn't affect my faith, but this is interesting.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it we have to make it less taboo, and yeah. I think our generation has done that, but we have to realize too, like, and I think it's good to educate people on like church history, like,
oh, for dude, sure,
like they questioned everything. Like, and they had to come up with answers, right?
And the crazy part is, and I've been thinking about this, like, if they did question, they were going to probably die.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
They were going to be burnt at the stake.
Yes. Yes.
So yeah. they had to like really consider, okay, what is my argument about this? Because I'm going to have to go to a church and mm-hmm. debate it. Mm-hmm. And if I'm wrong, I'm going to die.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And so I think today we're not open to answer or asking those types of questions. It's like we should, you know, we should, because it leads to a stronger faith, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think like, I mean, there's obviously layers to all of this, but like just human psychology, like we want the easiest thing, like,
yeah.
which is why McDonald's is so famous.
Yeah.
But like, we in all of our life, we just want the easy thing.
Yeah,
we want the easy answer. We want the easy solution. And like, much like all of life, the same thing with Jesus, it's not easy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not easy. And like reading the Bible right is not easy.
Yeah.
No, being a Christian is not easy. Being a disciple is not easy, but we want it to be easy.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's why there's so many books of like 5 ways to read your Bible better, 5 ways to become a better Christian. And then you read them and they still lead you to an empty place because like there is no easy answer to life in general. And then especially life as a Christian. But I don't think people like want that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, so let me ask you this, because I get asked this question a lot, especially from newer Christians. Like, they ask, where do I start?
Yeah.
If I'm reading the Bible, where do I start? And because I think most people, they just naturally just start with Genesis and they go all the way through. And I'm like, sometimes I'm like, I don't know if that's the best approach. Is there, do you?
That's a good question. Yourself? Yeah. I don't know that. I think here's what is the beauty of life and also Jesus is that like, you can be dumb and you are a Christian,
uh-huh.
right? To put it lightly.
Yeah.
Or you could be in the depths of the complexity of life and theology and you could still be a Christian, right? Like, it's not like Jesus is like, oh, I'm only going for the mature
sure,
people.
Absolutely.
And so like, I think you're fine. Just start. Mm-hmm. I think the easiest places to start is, you know, maybe an epistle.
Yeah.
Epistle. But I think like you just have to start, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe reading the Bible with other people, that is a better place to start than just reading it by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest things that I'm like processing through is like in our not only Pentecostal world, but just like modern evangelical world, everything's about just personal reading and personal revelation and personal prayer time. Even like in our world, it's huge, like your quiet time, your closet time.
Sure, yeah.
And like none, like it's mentioned once in the New Testament about your prayer, like closet time. Everything else was communal.
Mm.
Everything else. Mm-hmm. You're reading, you're praying. And so like,
well, that's how you build, right?
Exactly.
That's how you edify, right?
Yeah. And even like, even our prayer, I have such a weird time with prayer. I feel pretty good about reading the Bible and like interpreting it. I feel good about that, but prayer is super weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm finding myself that I'm learning to re-pray by praying the prayers of the old saints, right? So like, what are prayers, confessions that have been in the church for thousands of years?
Mm-hmm.
And those are retraining me to pray.
Mm.
Where like growing up in our world, like, oh, we don't talk about anything Catholic. Right.
Yeah.
And so like those have taught me to learn how to pray again.
Mm-hmm.
And I have such a weird relationship with prayer. So where would I start? I would start by reading with other people, more than just reading by myself. And I would start in one of Paul's letters. I think they're a little bit easier to sort of navigate to open a door into God's life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree. I usually tell people start with the epistles because they're very doctrinal. It kind of teaches you, you know, Christian living. I also tell people the gospels because that, you know,
the more that I study the Old Testament's pretty difficult to understand.
Oh yeah. 100%.
I think about this a lot just because a lot of my friends are not Christian. And it's just like, dude, we give people this ancient, over 2,000-year-old book, and we're like, study on your own.
Yeah.
God will reveal himself to you.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, that it's so complicated. I have this meme on my phone, and it says, in 200 years, people won't know the difference between butt dial and booty call. And that's why it's difficult to read the Bible.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know many people who... brand new Christians going into, let's say the book, let's say Leviticus,
right?
Coming out and feeling like not confused.
Right. Yeah.
I think a lot of times we kind of want to check the box off, right? Mm-hmm. Like I had my devotional time, you know? But I really think that you have to read to understand, right? If this is the foundation of your faith, like you don't want the foundation to be shaky, you know? I always tell people too, like, I mean, read with a commentary or at the very least, like a Bible handbook.
You know where would be a great place to start? Watching Bible Project videos and having your Bible open. So like the Book of John, watch their video and then go to your Bible.
Yeah.
I think that's a great place to start and an easier access point than normal. I don't know if you've read or are familiar with Michael Heiser.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He says all the time, like we don't have anything in our modern languages or books to help people understand the Old Testament. And even if we did, most people aren't reading.
Yeah.
Like people aren't reading anymore.
Yeah.
So like I try to tell young leaders and people that are in my life, like if you can become a better reader, just in general, you'll become a better reader of the Bible.
Yeah.
And like just people don't read anymore.
Sure.
So like how many people do you know that are reading poems right now?
Yeah, I don't know
any. And that's why we don't understand Psalms or Proverbs.
Yeah.
You know, that's why Revelations is so wild and people preach about it in a terrible way.
Yeah.
Because no pastor that we grew up with was reading poems.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and so if you don't know literature, then you don't know how to read the Bible. And it's a little confusing and it's really complex. But at the same time, you could be the smartest person, but there's just this mystery in reading, right? There's a difference between devotional reading and Bible study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there is something that happens to us even when we're just reading the Bible, right? And I think one of the things that I have to continually remind myself is like, yes, I'm growing in my knowledge. Yes, I'm growing in my theology, but like Jesus still meets people where they're at.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And so like, yes, we want people to become better, become smarter, but Jesus in his kindness and in his loving grace meets people where they're at.
Yeah.
And so even if you do open the Bible and are reading Leviticus and you have no idea what's going on, Jesus does.
Yeah.
And not only are you reading a book, but Jesus is reading you.
Right.
And so like, yes, everyone should level up.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's not like Jesus won't meet you.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's like being able to live in those two tensions.
Right. Yeah. 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 It's, I think you never want to, you don't want Christianity to become something like it's for the intellectually elite or something like that. Cause that's not it at all.
At all.
Which
to me is why I will never not be a Pentecostal.
Mm-hmm.
Because Pentecost evens out the playing field.
Okay.
Right? So like Reformed theology, you have to know how to read.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a reformer, if you can't read the Bible, you can't be saved. But it is Pentecost that evens the playing field because there's people in my church that don't know how to read. And I'm like, dude, you got to because of the Reformed theologian in me.
Uh-huh.
But it's Pentecost that brings the heavenly realm into any language.
Yeah.
Right. And so to me, I'm like, okay, I can't ever not be a Pentecostal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, if you think about the message of Jesus too, like, I mean, Jesus brought the good news to the poor. Right. People who were not, they were not elite in the least bit. They were poor. Probably they didn't know how to read. I mean, you can make a pretty good argument that the majority of the apostles were illiterate for some time.
Like one of the things that is that I feel like sucks because with Jesus and with the Bible, you can get like this great idea, spend your whole life in it, and then there's always a but, mm-hmm. right? So right now it's like super popular to be like, oh, God is for the oppressed, which he is. Mm-hmm. God is about the marginalized, which he is. And it's mm-hmm. very obvious in scripture, but Paul was neither of those things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Paul was in charge of the patriarchal system
sure.
and Jesus saved him.
Yeah.
Right. Paul was an elite. Mm-hmm. He knew how to read.
Yeah.
Right? And like, it's like, yeah, dude, Paul, Jesus is about all this stuff. And we built this context and this culture. And then always in the Bible, there's a but.
Yeah, I think you can get so caught up in just trying to make your argument, right? I say this pretty often. Like I think the church has done a really good job of like ministering to the poor, ministering, you know, doing outreach, feeding the hungry, you know, clothing those who don't have anything to wear, stuff like that. But like, my question is like, well, what is the church doing for those who aren't struggling
yeah.
to pay their bills? You know, mm-hmm. those who can afford, you know, nicer things. Like, do we just kind of like shun them because, okay, they're good? Or are we actually trying to, you know, yeah. bring Jesus to them? Because they also need Jesus. And so, I think it goes back to that whole, yeah, but, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. Jesus is for, he's for everybody, you know?
Everybody, which is crazy, right? Because if I'm not careful, I in my own head make that not the case. I think we all do. Mm. But it's like, oh, dude, you're not reading the Bible right. Mm-hmm. And then Jesus will slap me in the face by sending someone that doesn't know how to read to like melt my heart.
Yeah.
Right? And Jesus is like, huh?
Yeah.
See? You don't have to. And I'm like, dang it, you're right.
Well, I mean, and you can be super educated in the word and scholarly and know the Hebrew and the Greek and really have no real relationship with yep. Christ, right? And then you can have somebody who, I mean, is so hungry for the word. Maybe they can't read it. Maybe they don't have access to it, but they just love Jesus, right? Yep. And so I think...
And yep. that is where the communal aspect comes into play, right? Mm-hmm. Like... Yes, grow in your knowledge, right? What that is Paul's prayer. My prayer for you when he was in prison and he wrote this letter to the people, what did he say? Is that you grow in the grace and the knowledge of Jesus Christ,
yeah.
right? And so you have to grow in knowledge.
Right.
And when you grow in knowledge, you grow in the grace of Jesus Christ. Most people don't do one or the other.
Sure.
And it's both together, kind of like the love and truth.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, I think I have the advantage of like, I'm learning and reading all these things, but then I also have to be with people. Mm-hmm. I'm not just like studying for studying's sake. I'm studying to help my local Hispanic immigrant community. Sure. And that changes where I get stuck. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so like, I'm grateful for the time and where I'm at right now because of that tension. Like, mm-hmm. cool. Like I learned the context of 1 John. And what it meant in first century Judaism, mm-hmm. what does that do for the guy at my church that's from Salvador that walked all the way here, that is working two or three full-time jobs, that literally has no time to read the Bible, probably can't read the Bible?
Yeah.
What does that matter to him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, God is like, yeah, live in that.
Yeah. 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 I mean, and dude, I used to be the guy who was like, you know, and I mean, maybe sometimes I still am, but I would be so frustrated when people just didn't know like basic Bible context.
Sure.
Know? And they would take things out of context.
It is very frustrating.
It is frustrating. It's very frustrating. And like kind of going back to what you were saying earlier, you know, don't sit in the seat of scoffers, you know, stuff like that. Like I think my parents' generation, my grandparents' generation, they used a lot, and we do it too. You know, I'm not saying that we're perfect, our generation, but like we just take scripture and we conform it to what we want, right? But at the same time, like even though there was a pretty big religiosity to, you know, to my grandparents, dude, they love Jesus more than anything.
Yes.
You know? And that says something. Like I can sit here and be like, yeah, they were super religious and they imposed all these things that weren't even biblical on us.
Yeah.
But like, they had a genuine love for Jesus. And I think they're in their that religiosity, I think it came from a genuine place.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. And but we can only have that because of where we're at in life, because we didn't think like that at 20.
Oh yeah, no.
And 20, it was like, dude, they're idiots. They don't get anything right. I wish my parents would have understood context. I wish my parents, but then like the older you get, one of my, I've had the most beautiful chance at one of my favorite theologians I've gotten to meet and hang out with. His name's Chris Green. He's probably the best Pentecostal theologian.
Okay.
And he like has helped me reconcile my Pentecostal faith.
Okay.
And my Pentecostal belief. And he said, like, he taught me that you can read all the books, but nothing will be more true in your theology than the prayers you heard your mom pray at 4 a.m. Mm-hmm. And like, dude, it's so true. Like, I'm sure you have this experience of like being out, being stupid.
Yeah.
Sneaking back into your house at 1 a.m. and your parents are just like screaming in tongues.
Yeah.
And just like crying in love with Jesus. And now as a 30-year-old, I'm going, okay, I'm not going to stop reading theology books.
Yeah.
I'm not going to stop growing, but there's something deeply embedded in me that aside from the religion, aside from them not knowing context, that like Peter, where else would we go because of those prayers and like those things that our parents did that we won't find in the pages of a book?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, it's so beautiful to be able to reconcile that, because for a long time I was like, this is dumb.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, full extent, like just being like, I don't believe in speaking in tongues. Mm. You guys don't know anything about context. You're doing church wrong. Mm-hmm. And now being like, I'm such an idiot.
Yeah.
You know, like, and being able to not only reconcile those things, but live with them as well. And I don't have that gift that my parents had of prayer, but I don't need to.
Yeah.
And it lives within me and it's in my bones to some extent, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think I have this memory of my grandma where, I was spending the night at her house and I just kind of hear her crying and I don't know what's going on. I think something's wrong with her. And so I go, it's early, it's probably midnight, and I go into the room. She's on her knees. She's crying and she's praying for her son. You know, she's praying for my uncle. And I don't know what she's praying for. I think somebody died, you know? So I'm like, what's going on, Grandma? I'm probably like 8 years old. And she's like, I don't want your uncle to go to hell. And so like, you just hear like this mother who just loves her God with all her heart and her son with all her heart, you know, just, praying on his behalf. And like, that's a memory I'll probably never forget. Yeah. You know,
and it doesn't matter how many books you read.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how many PhDs you get.
Sure.
That is in your bones.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. 100%, man. So, let's talk about Amigos TV. First of all, why Amigos TV?
I initially had started a podcast with my dad. It was like during COVID and it was called Amigo Para Todos. Mm-hmm. And it was a Spanish podcast. I still feel like there's such few resources for stuff in Spanish. So everything we do at my church is both English and Spanish. So when I preach in both languages, our church is the same thing. So we started a Spanish podcast to be able to sort of just facilitate conversations. Mm-hmm. On top of that, I just wanted to be able to record like having these conversations with my dad. I love my dad. Super traumatic growing up experience and was a terrible father growing up, but through therapy and just prayer and a bunch of stuff, he's like one of my best friends now. And I just wanted to have like certain conversations with him that I can like just show to my kids. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like it was those couple things. And so it was called Amigo Para Todos. Got sick of setting everything up and editing. So we stopped doing it. And then I just kind of kept the page. And then just through time and just reading, I was just like, oh, dude, I want to do something with this. What should I do? And then so right now we put out a preaching course. Mm-hmm. And we're putting out preaching resources. We put out a free preaching ebook. Tomorrow we're going to record. My brother got his master's degree and he did his thesis on Eugene Peterson and his style of leadership versus like Western style of leadership. So we're going to put out a course on an intro to Eugene Peterson and a different way to think about leadership. And so we put out our preaching course and the goal is to, in the next year or so, be putting out like a subscription sort of base, constant theology and just deeper thinking resources for young leaders.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. And you're, cause you're putting on a preaching course, right?
Yeah.
You're doing that. So I guess tell me a little bit about that. What kind of sparked, I mean, I think this whole conversation just leading up to it.
Yeah.
I have an idea. But why is that something that you're passionate about? Just teaching people to.
Yeah. Number one, I feel like it's the one thing that I'm good at.
Okay.
I feel like I've been doing it for 20 years. It's kind of a little bit my life's work. It's my, magnum opus. And again, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine and he was like, man, you know, and the context that we grew up in, Hispanic, Pentecostal, a lot of kids are like pastor's kids. They don't get to go off to school like we got to. They just kind of stay and help mom and dad. And he was like, man, I was looking for like classes or courses on how to be a youth pastor and I couldn't find anything. I was looking on courses how to preach and I couldn't find anything. And I was just like, oh, dude, that's it. Like, how can I help? Obviously, I want to help anybody, but I am in my head going, how can I reach me at 16 that like I was preaching because my parents didn't have a youth pastor. There was no funds to hire anybody, but I was a pastor's kid, loved my parents, loved our community. And I'm that's who I'm thinking about and trying to reach. Obviously, it's for everybody, but I'm thinking of the young Hispanic kid that probably has no theology, probably doesn't know anything about context in the Bible. It's just getting up and like sort of I you know, growing up was just re-preaching Judah Smith sermons. And I'm going, dude, what if there was a resource or a thing that I could have taken at 16 and learned, okay, how do I find context? How do I learn hermeneutics?
Yeah.
How do I learn these things at a sort of basic level, but it's deep enough to get me started?
That's good.
And so we put out this course, it's 6 classes. And so in less than 1 hour, I think we give you a very good basic foundation to do that.
Okay. I dude, that sounds like invaluable. Like,
yeah.
Because I'm studying biblical exposition now, and like hermeneutics is not that easy, you know.
I mean, yeah, it gets so deep, yeah, you get so deep, quick,
right? And so like you can read some books on hermeneutics, and it's just really dense. Like as a 16-year-old, I'd probably not be interested.
Yes.
In that, you know. So making something that's comprehensible, I think that's really key.
I think that's what we did, and like not to like pat myself on the back too much. But so it's myself, we're not making any money of this and I don't get to pay these guys yet, but it's myself, Sammy, you met, he helps me with video editing and everything. And then my brother who got his master's and he like studied journalism, who knows how to write and how to think and how to put stuff down on paper. So they all help me filter these things. Cause I'm kind of an idiot at the same time. And so, yeah, man, like it costs $150, which is not cheap, but like, I think in an hour, I'm basically condensing like 2 years of college for preaching, for hermeneutics, in a basic like entry level way that can carry you. And like I was saying earlier, and I want to be careful. I think about this a lot because like master's classes and all this stuff that's like really popular right now, everything's like cheat code life hack. But it's like, dude, as you know, to preaching and to the Christian life, there is no cheat code.
Yeah.
So like we're making theological, biblically depth, a preaching course that's not going to make it easier to preach, but simpler.
Okay.
So it isn't easy to preach good, but this is a simple way to like help you learn, help you to start learning better. And again, I'm thinking of like my 18-year-old self, my 20-year-old self. Like when I got into Tim, I love Tim Keller. And I was always like, dude, I want to see him write a sermon. Like, okay, what book is he reaching for? Okay, he's gonna look at 1 Timothy chapter 1, verses 4.
How is
he getting all of this information? Like, that's what I think about and what I want.
Yeah.
And so that's what I tried to give.
I think that's great because, you know, there's a lot of people that want to preach. And I always get the question, like, where do I start, you know? And I think what I've found is a lot of people start with an idea. So like topical sermons. And then they go all over scripture, pulling all these verses, and there's kind of no direction. Like, I know what you're doing. I know what you're trying to say. I'm not much of a topical preacher. I'm more expository. Right. But I think that's how people start.
Right.
Like, okay. I want to talk about temptation, right? So boom, you pull all these things and
you literally Google temptation in the Bible.
Yeah.
And you're getting all these verses out of context. And then you share a story on how you had temptation with your girlfriend and you're sharing five or six verses that kind of have nothing to do with each other, but the story's good. Yeah. Yeah. I get it.
gets a few laughs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess how are you doing it? How are you structuring this class?
Yeah. So first class is sort of an introduction. Second class is a philosophy of preaching. Mm-hmm. I believe that like preaching is like a playground, but you have to be in a sandbox. And once you're in that sandbox, you can kind of do whatever. But in that sandbox, what we're teaching is eisegesis versus exegesis, hermeneutics, how to look at commentaries, sort of just these basic things, but that most people don't have a clue about, especially in our context. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't have a clue about at 18. Mm-hmm. And so like, I also believe that like scripture, the Holy Spirit, like speaks to us, mm-hmm. but then we have to filter it through commentary. We have to filter it through the historical church. And so like, those are kind of the things that we walk through. And then like the last couple classes are like, okay, this is something that nobody ever talked about. Hey, take care of yourself after you preach. Like think about your mental health, your emotional health, because it does take a toll when you preach.
Sure.
Hey, the day after you preach, go on a walk, breathe, take care of yourself, because that'll help you be a preacher for the long run. Mm. So it's like theological, doctrinal, but then as well, like a couple other things that like, again, that have helped me be able to preach for so long.
Mm, okay. Do you remember your first sermon?
I don't remember my exact first sermon, but like, again, I remember at like 16, 17, like we didn't have a youth pastor. So me and my friends kind of took over the youth. Mm-hmm. And dude, I think we would have youth Friday night. Mm-hmm. And like, I remember like Thursday morning listening to Judah Smith's preachings and just remixing them basically. Oh. But like, I don't remember my first actual sermon, but a big like pivotal moment in my life when it comes to like preaching, like I don't know how to say it, but it's like the service that they have when you graduate high school, like the baccalaureate service or something like mm-hmm. that. You know mm-hmm. what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
They always ask my dad to do it, but I told my dad, like, if they ask you, tell them to let me do it. Mm-hmm. And I got to do it. And I was like, so sweaty, dude. I like sweat through my cap and gown. and I probably did that thing where I just said random crap. Uh-huh. But I just remember that being like a moment where I was like, dude, this is like really cool that I'm getting to preach Jesus to my classmates.
Yeah.
The people that I'm with. I remember that very vividly.
Yeah. I mean, if that's something that you feel called to do, you have to realize you're not going to, it's something you develop.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I've developed as a preacher. I mean, looking back, I still remember my first sermon. It was probably like 5 minutes long at a youth service. I think the title was like Spirit of What If, and it was talking about, you know, Moses, where he was kind of giving all these excuses about not doing, you know, what God was asking him
to do. Dude, think about all the cringy sermons we probably gave and then having to give them now.
Yeah.
How mad you would be at yourself.
Yeah. I mean, dude, like I've been preaching for a long time, and we have our church has a podcast. So I can actually go back like the archives and kind of listen. And sometimes I do, and you kind of see the development. So, I mean, even, you know, well-established preachers, I think they're always developing their craft, because it is what it is. I mean, it is, you know, you have to be guided by the Spirit, and at the same time, you have to treat it with care and preparation because it's, I mean, it's public speaking.
Like
you're talking to people, you are communicating something. You can have the fire of the Word of God inside you, but not be able to communicate it well. And people are going to leave kind of unchanged. And so that's something that...
I always think that preaching is both a science and an art, right? Like, and half of the course is teaching the science of it, like hermeneutics, mm-hmm. like going to commentary, like, okay, what is the context of the scripture? Don't ask, what does this mean? Or what do I think about this? But like, why was Paul writing this and to who, mm-hmm. right? And that's the science of it. Like getting a good, I think if you can get a good method mm-hmm. to learning how to interpret scripture, you're off to a great start. But then there's a science of it, like your tone of voice.
Yeah.
You know, like we grew up and every preacher was screaming. Sure. I always say that, and they were sweating like Cat Williams, right? Like that's what it was. Uh-huh. And that's a terrible art, right? And not that you have to like whisper or talk, but like there is an art to elevating your voice, to lowering your voice, dynamics, to the speed of your voice, right? And being able to juxtapose those two things at the same time and not sacrifice one for the other. Like, just because you want to get really good into hermeneutics doesn't mean you shouldn't think about your timing or your cadence, right? And the same way, like, we grew up and most of it was this performance, like... Theologically, that's a different discussion, but dude, the preachers that we grew up in could hold tension really well, right? Like, they had like the art part of it kind of really good, but the science part of it, that's a different conversation.
Sure.
But being able to do both of those at the same time and continue to grow those at the same time. I've been preaching for 20 years and I feel like in the last year and a half, I'm like, this is the type of preacher that I want to be. Like, I'm able to do both of those really well. And I'm like, oh, like, I just feel confident. And I'm like, dude, this is it. Like, I'm hitting, like, I'm always trying to make my 20-year-old self kind of happy, you know? And when I'm preaching, I'm going, dude, this would make 20-year-old me happy, you know, like, theologically, culturally, like, I'm not just screaming at you, you know? And so, yeah, being able to grow in both of those, and that's kind of what we're trying to help people think about and do.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think I always want to be like Paul says, you know, to Timothy, like, handle the word with care and accuracy. So I'm always thinking about that. Like, I want to be theologically sound. I am a Pentecostal preacher. Yeah. I mean, I use my dynamics and, you know, those fuego moments. You know, I love that stuff, you know? And that's just kind of how I am as a preacher. But, like, I never want to compromise. Like, I always tell people, like, you can sound spiritual without being biblical.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that there's that pressure. We can kind of talk about this, like, Pentecostal preaching specifically. I think in the Pentecostal space, like, there is that temptation to sound really spiritual.
You want
to
get really honest really quick?
Let's do it.
We just had a Pentecostal preacher at my church. Might get fired for this, but who cares? Dude, super prophetic, super spiritual. Got up on stage and said, he literally asked our people, was Jesus fully God and fully man? And everybody in our crowd said both, because we did theological training this summer. And he said, no, Jesus was just man.
Whoa.
We had him in for two nights. Second night does the same thing. That's a huge deal to me.
That's
and so I, heresy. As the teaching pastor, had to have a conversation going, hey, we cannot sacrifice the prophetic for heresy.
Yeah. Now, was he trying to say something else?
Okay, here's the caveat. I got really sick, so I was just watching online.
Okay.
But I did feel like, as the teaching pastor, I had to address it. So it will get addressed at our church, and we will talk about it, because we believe that Jesus was both fully man and fully human. His divinity never at any point left him. But that is your case. Like, we, even if it feels good, like, he had, to me, he obviously has a prophetic gift, and like, it's spiritual. And even though it feels weird to me because of my theological training and mind, I have to be okay that he has that gifting, but I'm not willing to sacrifice it because of his lack of gifting and his historical theology. Right?
Yeah. I mean, and that's something that, as a preacher, as a teacher, like, you have that responsibility. Like, absolutely. Even if you're trying, you know, sometimes preachers are just, they say things to be like controversial, but like, you have to be careful with that stuff, man, because you're talking to people that some of them are brand new, some of them are trying to figure out, you know, like, all of these theological truths, and then you throw a bomb in there. It's like,
but again, like, in our world and in our context, most people don't know the Nicene Creed. Most people don't know the Apostles' Creed.
Yeah.
And so, like, they are getting self, like, revelation, self prophecy, and they have no idea to run those ideas through the Nicene Creed.
Yeah.
They have no idea to run those things through the Apostles' Creed.
Yeah.
Because those things are too Catholic, and Pentecostalism, specifically for Hispanics, want nothing to do with Catholicism, rightly so.
Yeah.
Right? But, like, this is, like, another huge thing that I can't stop talking about or want to keep pushing forward, is, like, we need to be tethered to historical theology.
Sure.
Like, start with the Nicene Creed. Start with the Apostles' Creed. Learn those things. Know those things. Because those are the things that tether us to the historical church.
And study heretics. Because I think you'll be able to recognize
Oh shoot,
that theology when you know the heretic, like Arianism, yeah. Martianism, Apollinarism, I mean all of these isms, yes. Right? That many of them were trying to figure out the divinity of Jesus, and that, I mean, that's one thing that they said. Well, Jesus, maybe he was fully man, right. And then God just deposited his spirit, and then all these crazy things and dualism and all that stuff.
Which, like, that's the danger of Pentecostalism. Like, I remember, like, hearing, like, oh, when Jesus was nailed on the cross, God left him, and that's why he says, God, why did you abandon me? Because where God is, sin cannot be, and Jesus was taking on the weight of sin, and, like, sounds good, sounds cool, makes a little bit of sense, but then if you run it up against these creeds, not true at all, right? And so, like, that is one of the things we have to be careful with is, like, even though it sounds good, we have to be able to then go to commentaries. Sure. We have to be able to then go to like creeds and go, okay, that doesn't add up. Mm-hmm. Let's go back and check at it.
Yeah.
Which is a hard thing to do. But as Pentecostals, we can't give one or the other up. Yeah. And we tend to give one up for the other.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I think just again, at the wanting to cause, you know, the hallelujahs and the shouts and the gritos de júbilo and all that stuff in a Pentecostal setting, which again, I'm a Pentecostal, Same. Preacher.
Yeah. But we'll start speaking tongues right now.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I think that many services that I've been in preachers that I've heard, I mean, they do sacrifice theology. And I think that that's why, you know, like Reformed theologians, they really look at Pentecostals as
a joke,
ignorant because of the way that we preach and the way that we say things. I think there is definitely a way to be theologically sound, biblically sound, and that Pentecostal preacher,
right? So. Yeah, it is very difficult. Like I think we were talking about this at the beginning. Like most of our life as Christians was caught, not taught, and so like we were never sat down and go, hey, this is why we do this.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody's screaming in tongues. Here's why.
Yeah.
Hey, we don't participate in that. Here's why. There was no sort of like quote unquote systematic to our theology. It was just like just a free for all.
Yeah. And that's how you get just kind of this a generation that kind of just repeats what they see.
Exactly.
Right. And so I think that's good because like, you know, in our church, anytime, you know, we do even communion. Like I'm mindful of the people that are there who don't know what the
how
heck
often
we're doing.
Do you do communion?
We do it once a month.
Okay.
Yeah, we do it once.
Dude, I'm at a point where if I'm preaching, I'm not ending without communion.
Okay.
Like I just have to now.
Okay.
It's kind of crazy, and my dad's like, and I get it, but like I'm like I cannot like it's one of the only things that the Bible says that the apostles committed themselves to.
Yeah.
One of the only like it's prayer. And breaking of the bread, sure. Right? And so, like, as Pentecostals, the prayer part is good, but we've abandoned communion.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, once a month is...
I think, yeah, even once a month is
that's crazy. That's a crazy for a Pentecostal.
Yeah, yeah. Even when we're doing those communions, like, I realize that there's people who don't know what we're doing. So, it's good to stop and take the time. And you sound like a broken record to the people that have been there forever, but, like... You got to educate people.
Absolutely.
What we're doing, you know?
That like one of the things that I think about, and I think it's because I always thought this way growing up was like, you have to answer people's questions, right? Like
even the unasked ones.
Exactly. Yeah. Like think about never knowing anything about God and then just walking into one of the services where we grew
like
up.
A culture shock.
And someone's just like in the corner screaming in tongues for an hour.
Yeah.
And you're like new to God, which is, again, God in his mystery, people still got saved, but it's like, why? Mm-hmm. Why are they doing that?
Yeah.
Right? Like, why do churches do hell houses?
Yeah.
Right? And like thinking through some of those things and then going, is this valuable? Mm-hmm. Is this historical? What can we and shouldn't we keep? And like, okay, let's explain this to people. Let's explain why we do or don't go to the movies.
Yeah.
Right? Let's explain why we do or don't drink.
Yeah.
Let's explain why we do believe an X thing. And for the most part, we don't do that.
Yeah, I agree. So I think anybody watching or listening, especially if you're a Pentecostal preacher, pastor, I mean, I try to make it a point, like if we have a moment where somebody in service is, you know, speaking in tongues and we have that interpretation, you gotta think about the person who has no idea what's going on, right? If you don't explain it, they might come back next Sunday, you know, but it's about doing, you know, our part, you know. I do remember we had an event once, I mean, this was years ago, the Holy Spirit broke out, man, and people were speaking in tongues, and there was this brand new visitor who had never been to a church. And I remember her texting, she was my wife's friend, she texted my wife afterwards, she was like, that was intense.
Yeah.
You know, and like, you don't think about that when you're around other people who are, you know, they're used to what you're used to.
It's the subculture.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But like, I will say this though, it is super cool that like your friend, your wife's friend, had never experienced that before.
Mm-hmm.
You go to a concert, you go to whatever. And to me, a little bit, even though it's weird, mm-hmm. even though I don't necessarily want it to happen,
mm-hmm.
that, if done right, I think is wonderful. Lets people know this is different.
Yeah.
What I just walked into is not just a concert.
Yeah.
Something happened to that lady that will never leave them.
Right.
And usually, especially the way we grew up, it's like not explained, doesn't make any sense, and sure. it's more scary.
Yeah.
But I think there's something about like the Pentecostal way that like when you walk into a service makes people that are not familiar with God go, that was really different than anything else I've ever been to.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that was not like a Coldplay concert.
Mm-hmm.
That was not like, you know, like a community get together.
Yeah.
There was something weird. And something worldly different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, look, you think about the day of Pentecost, right? When, you know, the Holy Spirit fell on all those in the upper room and they were speaking in tongues and the onlookers were like, what the heck is going on?
They're right? drunk. They're all drunk.
Right. It was weird to them. But then there was an explanation, right? Like, hey, we're not drunk. Yeah. This is the Spirit of God. And then Peter starts to preach a message and everything. And so like, he didn't just ignore it. Right. You know, and I think that's what we do sometimes. Oh, absolutely. they don't understand. They don't get it. Right. They're non-believers, whatever. Like, take the time to, you know, explain what's going on in your spirit. I think that's really
important. Even take the time to try to explain it to yourself.
Yeah. That's
because crazy. a lot of times it's like, oh, it's just what I do.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, but why?
Yeah.
Do you have to do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like why,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I mean, this is a different conversation. I don't know if we have time to get into, but like, because it is the subculture, people are just doing it because it's a part of the culture, and they never, it's never really genuine.
Yeah, well, then you get in the danger of, you know, being slain in the spirit, but it wasn't the spirit, right. It was just the expectation. The
subculture.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
I always say, like, you know, growing up where we did, like, you're around black people, you're around Hispanic people, you're around white people, and like, when I was with my black friends, I talked a little bit more hood,
mm-hmm.
you know, when I was with my Hispanic friends, we're throwing in the Spanish lingo,
mm-hmm.
and it's the same thing at church, like, there's a lingo, there's a way you pray, there's a way you speak in tongues,
yeah.
and if you're not careful, you're just doing it all the time,
yeah.
and you have no, you don't catch yourself,
yeah.
and then, was that really God, or were you just with your black friends?
Mm.
Was that really God, or was I just talking Tex-Mex because I was with my Hispanic friends?
Sure.
You know what I mean? And yeah. like, the way that we do church is like, oh, it's just because I'm at church now.
Yeah.
And there's like, no rhyme or reason to it, sure. you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I mean, you should always feel comfortable and safe around your church. You know, I think mm-hmm. if you're going into church and you're being in a worship service, like that's your safe place, man. And I think a lot of people long for that. But just kind of going back to what you said, I think, You have to think about the things that are happening. I'm really big on, you know, don't insert God where He's not. You know, mm-hmm. don't manufacture something that isn't God, because then it's not genuine, like you said. And I think those are the things that give valid reasons for the skeptics to be like, what's really going on in there? You know,
mm-hmm.
So I think just being more mindful of the things that we do, you know, the things that we say, preachers, the things that you preach. I think that's really.
I think we could do a whole podcast on weird things we've heard.
Oh man, we sure can, man.
And you remember that convention where they threw the Holy Spirit like a baseball? I always think about that.
No, I don't remember that one.
You were there for sure.
Really, the one that I remember was. And I want to hear about that one because I don't think I remember that one. But The one I remember hearing is like, hey, if you want the gift of tongues, if you want to be baptized in the Spirit, somebody said, just start saying stuff.
Sure.
Just start uttering words, right? And I remember that felt weird to me. I participated. I was like, I want to be baptized in the Spirit. Yeah. So I was there just saying, shimmy, shimmy, shimmy. You know, I was like, I was saying these words that weren't words.
I always, in those scenarios, I'm like, dude, what if there's a kid that's not crazy? Just start saying the F word over and over. Like, that would be so funny.
I mean, but that's what I'm talking about. Like the manufacturing, you know.
But like, really dumb. I don't think that I would ever do that. Uh-huh. But like, it makes sense. You know, like, again, like we were saying at the beginning, like, this is genuine. Like, if you truly believe in to its fault, our Pentecostal background, like, the speaking in tongues is, like, the thing. Mm. Like, if that's your thing, you would want everybody in on it.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, to a fault.
Yeah. Right?
And if this, and that's, again, I think we're talking on several conversations, but, like, I think we're at a point where we're not willing to risk that spiritual power for the sake of its theological sake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
you,
like,
I get you.
I understand. Like,
yeah, I don't fault the preacher. No. I mean, I think I mean, I think his heart was in the right place. But
what a heretic! Let's burn him.
I just think that it wasn't helpful for me. And I mean, obviously, it's that memory stayed with me of like that day where I really wanted the Holy Spirit, and I was just trying to make it happen on my own. I don't know. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of mysteries.
I ask myself this question a lot. If you were to grow up like in like a reformed place, mm-hmm. do you think you'd be where you're at?
That's
like,
a great question.
Because I'm always saying, okay, I'm willing to like question what I grew up in.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm not going to scream. I'm not going to be crazy about like speaking in tongues and like uncontrollable. Mm-hmm. But like I just did a teaching on like your voice as a preacher, and like you don't have to scream, you know. Growing up, like I wish somebody would tell me you don't have to scream. Mm-hmm. But then, like I'm thinking, like okay, what if I grew up Anglican and nobody screams? Mm-hmm. What if somebody told me, hey, you can start screaming as a preacher?
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, like, and I know what you mean.
Like, what would be different about me if my parents would have been Reformed Baptist?
Yeah. I do ask myself that question. Like, would I be Pentecostal if I didn't grow up Pentecostal? And I think. I don't know. That's my answer.
Yeah.
But I have, I think we both have kind of questioned, you know, our own upbringing, to a place where obviously I didn't leave Pentecostalism, I'm still Pentecostal, and, I've committed to staying true to the word. And I do believe in the Pentecostal movement today and the works of the Holy Spirit.
It's the biggest movement in the world.
It is. And so, I mean, I don't know, but I want to say, like, if I grew up anything else, I don't miss.
Yeah. I'm just like, dude, if I would have grown up at John Piper's church, would I have longed for Pentecost?
Yeah.
You know, where like as a Pentecostal, I longed for Reformed teaching.
If Paul Washer was your mentor,
you know, like would I have been like, dude, this falls so short.
Yeah.
You know, like there's no depth to your like ability of the Holy Spirit where like, because of where we grew up, we're like, dude, this falls so short.
Yeah.
You know, like there's no depth to your theology. I always ask myself that question.
Well, it's interesting to me because I'm still a Pentecostal, but there's not a lot of great Pentecostal theologians.
Oh, absolutely. I know why. Mm. I know why. So Pentecostalism is ridiculously young. Reformed theology is at least 500 years old.
Yeah.
Historical theology is over 2,000, you know, 1,000 years old. And like Pentecostalism just celebrated 100 years.
Yeah.
Right? So like, so let's go Reformed theology. Reformed theology is 500 years old. It has 400 years on us.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's had time to process.
Sure.
So we have these pop guys, these pop theologians, John Piper, Tim Keller, John MacArthur, where Pentecostalism is so young. We don't have the pop theology yet. Everything's just super heady.
Yeah.
So like a lot of the big theologians right now are Pentecostal, but they're just like barely getting it into academia that it hasn't processed its way to a popular level. Mm. So there is no popular theologian because they're barely all just learning.
Yeah.
Right.
That makes sense. We got to get on it, man.
I'm like, dude, how can I be the Pentecostal Hispanic NT Wright? That's like a question I'm constantly asking myself. Like, that's what I want to be like.
Yeah.
How do I get to that? And I don't know that I ever will, but that's what I'm thinking about right now. Trying to reverse engineer that.
I mean, I think we need it, man. Especially if it is the fastest growing movement.
Absolutely.
Right. right? We need more.
And they're coming, dude. Chris Green, you should look him up. I don't know if you're familiar with his work.
That's your friend. That's the guy that...
I will say we were friends on record. I don't know that we are, but great guy, super young. I don't even think he's 50 yet.
Okay.
The Assemblies of God just hired a sort of head of theology. I don't know if you know that.
Who's that?
His name's Alan Tennyson.
Okay.
We're bringing him into the church in April.
Oh, awesome.
And brilliant dude. Oh, he's so freaking smart. Mm-hmm. Both of those dudes are huge. And I think like we'll be the forefront of bringing Pentecostal theology a little bit more pop, mm-hmm. a little bit more like to the masses and it being theological, you know, like Chris Green he's too smart, dude.
I'm about to bring him on the podcast.
Oh, man, he's so freaking smart. And so those two guys, I think, are great. And there's a couple other guys. I can't think. Gordon Fee, he's probably the biggest when it comes to Pentecostal theology. Right.
Craig Keener, he's another one. Yeah, but, I mean, for every one Pentecostal theologian,
I would say those two dudes are at the forefront of making it more accessible and very, 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 very biblical and very, very theological.
Yeah.
Those two dudes off the top of my head. But yeah, man. This is a different conversation, but like they're both white. They don't really talk to our people literally and figuratively.
Mm-hmm.
And so like there's that hole and that missing thing that I'm constantly thinking about.
Yeah.
They're great. I freaking love them.
I mean, I think Hispanics, I mean,
neither one of us look very Hispanic.
No, not at all. But I think Hispanics are drawn a lot to preachers, right?
Oh, absolutely. We're
drawn to preachers who preach good.
Why, to me, Reformed theology, parts of it are great because in Reformed theology, it's the preaching that drives the theology, right? Like it's the preaching that drives the pulpit. So if we can get preachers to be sounder in their theology, it'll drive our Hispanic Pentecostal culture to better theology, right?
Yeah. And I think it's coming. Like you said, man, I think it is coming. I am seeing a hunger, especially from a lot younger people, that want to be educated in the word, which is great. It's encouraging to me, man, because I was thinking, man, this is lost generation. You know?
For sure. Nah, dude, they just want depth, especially in our context. Like it's not enough. That's why we do it.
Yeah.
Which like, I don't know how much you want to break this down, but like young people right now, like Gen Z, they just don't care who you are. Mm. Like it doesn't matter if you're my dad. It doesn't matter if you're my pastor. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm not going to listen to you. And so like, to begin with, like, it doesn't matter what we're doing or what we're saying. They're going to question it.
Yeah.
And so if we don't have solid depth answers to their questions, what does it matter?
Sure. You just reaffirmed what I had Jacob Salgueto on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And he's really big at Gen Z, right? He's I guess you'd call him an influencer of sorts.
Let's call him a Gen Z prophet.
Let's do it. So, I mean, he said the exact same thing.
And like, it's true. Yeah. I preach coach him, mm-hmm. and we talk about that a lot. Like, which I mean, I feel like I have that in me, so I understand that part of Gen Z.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just cold. Like, it's just all of them are that way.
Yeah.
But like, they don't care. Oh, everybody's speaking in tongues. They're not just going to do it just because everybody's doing it.
Yeah.
Oh, everybody does this. They're not going to do it just because of this. And like, I understand that part of them because I'm that way. Even now, like at our church, like our pastor would be like, "Everybody raise your hands," and I'm like, "Nope, no, I'm not gonna." You know, like, everybody, come on, speak out loud. We're going to pray. And I'm always like, no, I'm not going to, you know?
Rebel.
unfortunately. And so I understand that part of them. But if we do not, like, it's not enough to just go, this is just what we do. Sure. Like, you have to have depth to it. You have to have clear explanations to it. And if you can't have them, then for a season, stop doing them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if I was a pastor and if I can't define the things that we do for the next generation, then I'll just stop doing them for a little bit until I can clearly define them to them.
Yeah. So like I was having this conversation too with Jacob. What do you think it looks like receiving education? Because this Gen Zers, they're really big into shorts and reels.
Oh, yeah.
Like if you can't get your message across in 5 seconds, like I'm scrolling, I'm swiping up. Yeah. Right. And so when you're talking about theology and Bible, I mean, these are things that are very in-depth. You have to really educate people and you need time. So how do you think the future looks like for like Bible education, theology, all that?
I'll say this personally, because I don't know for everybody, but like, I think it looks like kind of what we're trying to build.
Mm-hmm.
Like We're putting out shorts. We're putting out like trying. I understand like the quick videos. I love the quick videos. They're super cool. So we're trying to do that, but always inviting to something deeper, right? So like I'm gonna try to explain to you hermeneutics in a 20-second video, but that's not enough, which we know that.
Yeah.
And so like I'm going to make a 20-second video about reading and why you need to read, but you can't read a book in 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And so like doing these things as an invitation always. You need to pause give or what
it,
do you need to do?
Give it a second. Hold on. All right. I don't know what we're going to keep going on. All right. Go. I do know where you are.
Yeah. Doing those things as an invitation to something else. So like even like I hate this, but like we put out the course and it's digital. I want physical. Mm-hmm. Like I want to send you a VHS.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like I want you to come to a thing in person.
Yeah.
That is not necessarily Gen Z, but like they also do want that.
Yeah.
And like Gen Z is kind of a subculture in the way that they think. Mm-hmm. But there's still things to them that they're humans.
Yeah.
You know, like that sounds funny to say, but like they're people. Right. And so ultimately they will have the same longings you and I have.
Sure.
They will ask a lot of the same questions you and I have. Mm-hmm. They'll just do it differently. They're probably going to do it a lot faster than we are. Mm-hmm. And so like we have to, as they're doing it that fast, be able to answer it, not necessarily that fast, but have the depth for it.
Yeah.
And so We're trying to do the stuff on socials. I think like I'm fairly young, so I understand it. Mm-hmm. And like, so are my brother and Sammy, they're a lot younger. So they're, I'm like, what do y'all think?
Cause
I'm constantly going like, dude, this is kind of whack. Right. And they're like, yeah, that's dumb. And I want to, and I think that Gen Z would want to, like, I'm ultimately leading to a lot of this stuff being offline. Mm-hmm. Right. So like, are you familiar with like the Legionnaire Center? Mm-hmm. And like, there's another one. I can never say the word, but it was in Sweden. It was Francis Schaeffer.
Okay.
La Brea Institute. Oh, you know that it's basically the same thing as Legionnaire.
Okay.
It's just like a place where like students that were done with seminary, students in between like pastoral jobs could go, and there was lectures, there was theological training. Like that is my ultimate goal. Like I'm building something online, but ultimately I want this. Okay. Like, I like the property I have right now is kind of set up where it could kind of be that, but like, dude, what if every 3 months I held like a preaching conference with myself, Chris Green, and like, it was like super boutique, super small, super purposeful, super intentional. And we could walk these 10 to 15 guys through like a weekend of intensive theological training to be better preachers.
Yeah.
Right. Like, what if I could have a place where I could house five to Impact Now, basically, where I could house these 5 to 10 guys. And like they were just done with school. They couldn't go to school because their parents didn't have the resources. They're from Hispanic church, but they could come for 3 months, live, and we're going to train them over these 3 months and like teach them these theological depths. And so like, that is my ultimate goal. Is it going to work? I don't know.
Maybe, man. I love that. I love that desire that you got in your heart, man. And I mean, I have one as well. I shared it with you guys, you and Abe last time, briefly. I don't want to reveal too much, but like, I have a passion, like I'm passionate about bringing the culture back to Christ because like the worldly culture. And I think like you might ask, like, is that even possible? I think it is possible. I think at one time, you know, you think about the Roman Empire, it was Christianized, you know, it was Christianized, which is crazy to think that the same people that crucified Jesus became like home to Christianity. So I think that, you know, with stuff like this, stuff that you're doing, equipping the next generation to just bring, you know, it's not always about like the, I think our generation was really big into like the production, right? Yep. The stuff that you go to at church and stuff like that. And we try to make church attractive. And I mean, there's a place for that. But I think genuinely, this next generation coming up, they just want, something real. Mm-hmm. And what's more real than Jesus? So yeah, like even this podcast, I don't know if it's going to do well with the younger generation because I just don't know if they're going to be in the podcast. I don't
like know. The thing though is like, there's always a but.
Yeah.
Like only do shorts, only do this, but the Joe Rogan podcast.
Yeah, right.
All these comedians have these 2-3 hour podcasts and they're getting numbers.
Sure.
Right. So like, it's hard just because there's an easy answer. Mm-hmm. And this is not easy.
Yeah.
But like, there's always a but, and it's just a matter of like time, and like, that sucks.
Yeah, for sure. But we're still young enough, man.
I hope so. I feel really old.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes.
But yeah, man, like, I think, again, I'm always asking myself, what are the things that I wish 20-year-old me would have had access to?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And trying to, everything that I do is trying to answer and do that. So like, even when I preach, like, so my preaching structure right now is like, I'm going to read my verses. And then lately I've been quoting a song. Like, so I'm really into hip hop. So I'm quoting a Swisha House song, and then I'm talking about it, how that relates to Jonah. Mm-hmm. Then I'm going to talk about some commentary, some biblical depth. And then like, I'm going to tie it back into the song, and I'm going to tie it back into the scripture, and then I'm going to end in communion.
Okay.
Right. But then I'm going, dude, 20-year-old me would have found it so tight for someone to quote Swisha House and then talk about the book of Jonah.
Mm.
Right. And so even in my sermon writing,
yeah,
like I'm doing that, and all of that translates to the rest of me. And like, I think obviously this is God and is, as John Piper would say, providence.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I have just always been into culture, like not for the sake of like trying to like preach, but just because I love music. I probably like most people would be uncomfortable with how much hip hop I listen to,
mm-hmm.
and like how much hardcore I listen to. Like 2 weekends ago, I was in a parking lot with like 20-year-olds at a hardcore show, and like everybody's smoking weed, but that I just love that, like that music, and it's made me who I am a part of. But like being able to be in that place while at the same time reading an N.T. Wright book in the parking lot,
mm-hmm.
right? Like that brings like something that I don't think a lot of people have. And thankfully, I think that comes from God to be able to sit in those spaces where I can both like have a friend that is an atheist socialist, but I can be friends with him.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, 3 months ago, I could go sit in a room with old white people and listen to N.T. Wright lecture for two days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, to me, that is like the beauty and the richness of my life that God has given me. And it is that richness and that beauty that will allow me to reach my younger self.
Yeah. And I think key to that too is because you seem like the person who's just like, you're going to be you no matter where you're at.
And
you
it's unfortunate for myself and for other people because it's a headache.
Well, that's good because I mean, you carry Christ in you. And so you can be, it doesn't matter who you're around, right. Like you are going to bring, you're gonna possibly bring in an influential spirit, you know, to somebody who is not a believer.
Right.
You're not going to necessarily, you know, blend in with them or become right. like these chameleons, right?
Yeah.
Like you're going to be who you are no matter who you're with. And I think that's something that is genuine. And we need more. I think we need more of that because even going back to our earlier conversation, a lot of times when we're at church, we kind of blend in with the church people when we're outside of church.
I always hated that, dude. Yeah. Like, and I'm like obviously a lot more gracious now that I'm older. It comes with time. But like even like when I moved back from Venezuela, I had to like tell my wife and I had to tell one of my best friends, please don't let me be a jerk because like I hate being around church people. Mm. I hate being around other church leaders. I hate being around like pastors. Like I'm just like, oh, dude, like I'm over this. Mm. You know what I mean? But I just don't like people to begin with. but like because a lot of them, like you said, are fake. A lot of them don't have personalities. A lot of them don't like know anything else other than that. And I get it. You know what I mean? Like I understand it. Yeah. But like, that is not at all who I am. And it rubs me the wrong way. And I'm sure my personality rubs them the wrong way.
Yeah.
And I understand that. And so I have to like, even though I know all this theology, I have to continue to ask God to grow my grace.
Sure.
Right. Like what does it matter that I know like the ins and outs of the book of Jonah if I can't be gracious to another pastor that I think is really annoying?
You know what I mean? Yeah. 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 I think that's pretty important. I mean, it's funny that you said Jonah specifically because the same prophet.
I just did a giant deep dive this summer, like 5 or 6 months on the book of Jonah. Yeah. So I'm like,
you're sharp on that one. How old are your kids, man?
I have a 5-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 6-month-old.
Oh,
so man. I'm living in hell right now.
Dude.
I'm just playing kids. I love you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I think because you said earlier, you know, you're always thinking about, you know, you're thinking about the younger version of yourself, yeah. right? And I am too. Like, I think there's a lot of things that I have now that I didn't have, you know, when I was younger. And I think doing that also just creates a better world for your kids, you know,
yep.
growing up, they're going to have access to the stuff that you wish you had.
Like therapy.
Therapy. Yeah. That was a big no-no back in, mm-hmm. back in the day. I mean, even to some people, it still is, which is crazy. But, yeah, stuff like that. I just always thinking about, I'm always thinking about my girls, you know, in the world that they're going to grow up in.
Sure.
And then they're girls, so that makes right. it a little bit, I mean, even more so.
I have 2 girls,
yeah,
1 boy and 2 girls.
So you get it, you get it. Yeah, I just want them to grow up in a world where the church is real,
yeah.
you know? It doesn't, you know, it doesn't shy away from the hard questions.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, I want my kids to remain in the Lord for the rest of life, you
yeah.
know? I don't want them to have a moment where they leave and potentially don't come back. And, you know, I want them to remain in God and in the church, but that really does, it brings a lot of responsibility to us in the church.
Sure.
Right. And so I think the things that you're doing, the things that you're about, I think that's really, really helpful to this next generation. But yeah, man, I don't know how long we've been going. I don't see the time on there. But
Let me say this about kids that I think is very helpful. At least anybody listening, like, and credit to my wife more than anything, because she's mm-hmm. so kind and patient with our kids. But like, one of the things that I'm really proud of that we do is we explain things to them, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So like, there was this really drunk lady that was walking barefoot near our house, and we were in the car getting ready to leave somewhere. My wife got out and saw and asked if she was okay. She was like, "Can I have some water? Can I have some food?" My wife ran into the house, got her, and I was in the car with the kids, and I explained to them, "Hey guys, mom is doing this because we love Jesus. Mom is taking care of this lady we don't know because Jesus asked us to take care of other people mm-hmm. and especially our neighbors." Right. And yeah. so like taking little moments to explain to them, "Hey, we do things a little different, but here's why," which we were talking about as sure. pastors.
Yeah.
We should do that to our people. And so like growing up, secular music out of the question.
Mm-hmm.
We let our kid listen to secular music.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like my son is in love with the Ninja Turtles right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I took him to the movies to go watch the new Ninja Turtles.
Mm-hmm.
And he is listening to Can I Kick It by A Tribe Called Quest. He wakes up, wants to listen to it all the time.
Mm.
And I'm raising my son in an environment where like he is different and he is weird because we're Christians,
mm-hmm.
but we're going to make that plain and simple to him that we do things differently. But then I'm not going to also make him a separatist where like he can't watch these movies or he can't participate in the part of culture that is redeemable. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, and so doing that because we're Christian and like, I'm really proud of this, but my son knows 2 catechisms.
Okay.
Right.
Nice.
Like that's so cool to me.
Mm-hmm.
My son knows Genesis 1:1. Right. And so like doing that and at the same time teaching, I have my oldest son is a boy, like teaching him how to control his emotions
mm-hmm.
at this early age, which like was wild to think about for my parents. Right.
Yeah.
So like, "Hey son, you're screaming out of control. I know that maybe you can't calm yourself down right now, but I'm going to set a 1-minute timer. I'm going to come back and let's breathe together."
Mm-hmm.
"Okay, are you ready? Okay, hold my face. We're going to breathe together and take a couple deep breaths. Hey, are you in control of your emotions?" "No." "Okay, that's okay. Sometimes I'm not either." Or sometimes when I get upset, like coming back later and being like, "Dude, I wasn't in control of my emotions. I'm sorry."
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so like, being able to explain things to them, not only that are Christian necessarily, but like, which I still believe Jesus is in, but like our emotions and being, teaching them now how to control them.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah.
And at the same time, like letting them enjoy parts of quote unquote the world that are fine. You mm-hmm. know?
So yeah.
those have been very helpful where I mean, we'll see when they're older, but I don't freak out about the future for them. Because they are going to create the future because of the things that we're teaching them now. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, like, if I think about it too much, maybe I can get fearful, but I'm like, dude, I wish my dad would have been able to do this. And he couldn't. That's fine. But he has set me up in a place where now I can.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really all about the foundation. If they have a solid foundation, if they know who they're called to be, if they know the word, I think that's the foundation that you build upon, right? So anything else, man, you want to share?
There's always so many things brewing inside of me. But hopefully, one of the things that I'm on lately is like fighting for beauty.
What do you mean?
Like, we live in such a cynical world. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, the statistics that like men our age don't have friends. Men our age don't have any fun.
Yeah.
And like, just like, when is the last time you listened to a favorite album? You know, when is the last time I love going to the movies by myself?
Dude, I'm all about that. My wife thinks I'm weird.
No, I love it, dude. Like, you know, like finding pockets and moments at least once a week, if not once a month, for beauty in your life. Like, I love jazz too. And like just putting on a pair of really good headphones and listening to Miles Davis, an album through, that'll change my week. Mm. You know, like going to go watch a really good movie by myself, it'll change how I feel. But then ultimately seeing and feeling and being a part of beauty like that, I think to me ultimately shows me even more so the beauty of God at all times.
Yeah.
And so like, fighting in our, we live in such a cynical world, and if we do not fight for beauty, who will?
Yeah.
And so not only should I take in beauty, but then I should also put out beauty, and I can't put out beauty if I don't take in beauty. And then all of that is also fixating in me the beauty of God ultimately. Mm. Right.
So how do you see the glory of God, like, in things that don't necessarily speak Jesus?
Sure. I think several things. Number one, ultimately, all truth is God's truth, right? So science, math, not those things aren't speaking about Jesus, but they point to Jesus. Same thing in culture. There's beauty in really good music. Mm-hmm. Like, listen to Miles Davis and tell me God isn't in that.
Yeah.
You know, John Coltrane, who ultimately became a Christian, like, listen to like really good musicians. I'm not talking about like Taylor Swift. I'm not talking about like, you know, Lil Yachty, Drake. Mm. I love you, Drake. Like really good music, and tell me God is not, like, I don't know. I know you love music, but like, yeah, I'm sure you've listened to something and it's made you cry.
Oh yeah,
by how
sure.
freaking good it is.
Yeah.
Like, how is God not in that?
Well, yeah, that, and I mean, just watching like really good movies, like stories. Like,
so I ultimately went off to college because I wanted to be a film critic.
Okay.
I wanted to like write books and blogs about like film and theology and how they coexist. So like, film is huge to me. Like, I love movies. Like, it's a little harder now that I'm older and have kids to like go to the movies all the time. But like, dude, I would go to the movies 2 or 3 times a week. Mm. Like, I just love film and I love cinema. And like, number one, it's stories, right? Which ultimately help us learn story in the Bible better. But then the beauty thing is like, dude, like, I went to go watch the new Martin Scorsese movie, like, what is it called? Killers of the Flower Moon. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Mm. 3.5 hours. And it's like forcing me to sit down and watch this beautiful story on the screen that ultimately lets me be able to read scripture better.
Yeah.
You know, it's teaching me story. It's doing something in me. Not, again, not all movies are this way. And that, I think, is the question you're asking. Like, learning, like, what, like, I think here's the easiest way to learn how to do that. Mm-hmm. There's a huge difference in eating McDonald's food and like going to fine dining restaurant. Mm-hmm. And that same like trajectory is true in music, and it's true in movies, and it's kind of true in everything. Mm-hmm. And though I can find God in a McDonald's 10 piece, like, there's something beautiful about like, even like your grandma's cooking that is so different than McDonald's. Mm-hmm. But most of the things we take in, music, movies, books, are McDonald's, and they're not this careful thought out thing. And it's the careful thought out things that, even if they're not Christian, can lead us to beauty.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think I find God, I find the glory in God in a lot of things that don't necessarily preach
absolutely
Jesus. I mean, you know, if it's something that's going completely contrary to the nature of God and is like sinful, then I stay away from that. But like, I'll often, and I'll tell my wife this sometimes, like, I just appreciate what, I appreciate God's design in man, you know, like God created man to be so creative, right?
We're created absolutely
in his image. And so I'll watch something or I'll listen to something and I'm like, man, that was beautiful. And that's God, you know, I mean, it's not, again, it's not like, you know, directly God, but it's right. Like, this is the hand of God.
Which maybe directly going back to the story of Jonah, right? Like,
okay,
the fish is a vehicle of destruction and evil,
mm-hmm.
and God uses it.
Mm.
So like, I think, again, going back to one of the earlier conversations we're having, like, to mature in your faith, to mature in your theology, some of these things we're talking about right now, you can't think about or have unless you are mature,
mm.
right? And so, like, understanding that God can use anything, a fish, a destruction vehicle of evil, right?
Yeah.
To bring about Jonah where God wanted him to.
Yeah.
What about music? What about movies? Right. And so, like, obviously being mature enough to know, like, so here's an example. When I was in college for like a year or two, I stopped listening to hip hop because it would just make me really horny.
Okay.
Right. Like, yeah. Rap is very sexually explicit.
Mm.
Right. Now I'm married. I can be horny. Right. So guess what? I'm listening to Kanye. I'm listening to Drake because that's all directed towards my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I had to stop for a season. That takes maturity to know that.
Okay.
Right. So, like, if you're immature and you can't think about some of these things, just stop it.
Yeah.
Don't ask, like, oh, how do I do this? What should I should not do? Just stop it. But then as you grow, you can think about, oh, you know what? I can watch some of these movies, right? Mm. Oh, you know what? I can listen to some of this music. If it's causing you to make stupid decisions, don't do it.
Sure.
Right? But as you grow in your faith, as you grow in your maturity, as you grow in understanding theology, and like, some of these questions aren't theological, they're more philosophical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, if God can use a fish,
mm-hmm.
why couldn't he use, you know, like Miles Davis to speak to me about God's beauty?
Yeah.
You know, why can't he use, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how into this you want to get, but like, why couldn't God use a horror movie to like, speak about the darkness of my heart, which God has done to me,
mm.
you know, and like being open to those things. And I'm open to them because I'm searching for story. I'm searching for beauty. I'm searching like, and I think too, it's like a posture of my heart
mm-hmm.
or of our hearts should be like, why am I watching these things ultimately?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're just watching like this horror movie because you're trying to see some boobs,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's different than like what, most good, again, the difference between McDonald's and really good food,
yeah.
really good people that are making music or movies, they're doing something deeper
yeah.
and bigger than just like, oh, let's just make music for music's sake.
Sure.
Right? Like, let's just make this movie to like make some money.
Right.
Like they're telling this powerful, deep story to get to a deeper thing,
yeah, yeah.
which ultimately is what the Bible and God are doing.
Yeah. I think if you look for the glory of God, you'll find it because glory of God sure. is pretty much everywhere, you know? So yeah, I agree with that. I've always had those moments where I'm like, man, I appreciate so much what people can do. Right. And that it makes me appreciate their talent, but more than that, it's like, man, to God be the glory.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like you did that. Like you did, this is the work yeah. of your hands. Like
I don't know why we do this. Maybe you can answer it. But like, if somebody is really good as a bank teller,
mm-hmm.
we're not like, oh, but is he Christian?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You go get food and the chef is really good. You're not like, oh, but is he Christian?
Sure.
But we do that with movie or with music.
Right. Yeah.
Why? And I get it. I get like, oh, it's because the devil used to be, you know, the worship. And so he took music with him.
Yeah.
There's some truth to that. Yeah. Right. Like,
well, where's the truth in that? Do you think that there are some, like there's movies and music that people should stay away from? Would you say that?
Yeah, I would. I think, again, it's a maturity thing,
mm.
right? So like, for example, like I've never been, like drawn to substances, drinking or drugs. Never in my life has that been a thing for me.
Yeah.
Which is really funny because I processed this with my therapist the other day. Like, I rebelled against those things because I knew I was supposed to do those things to rebel. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
So like, I knew that as a pastor's kid, to rebel against being a pastor's kid, I had to start drinking. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to rebel against that, so I then didn't do it. Okay. Not because I wanted, not like because mm-hmm. I was Christian, mm-hmm. just because of the rebellion in me, right? And so like, yeah, just don't partake in them if they cause you to do something where I can be around. Like, a lot of my friends smoke weed. A lot of my friends drink. They're not Christian. I can be with them and around them while they do that, and it doesn't bother me at all. Mm. Like, I'm not like, oh my gosh, I wish I could smoke, or I wish I could. Sure. Like, it just doesn't faze me.
Yeah.
If it's something that you struggle with, don't do it. Right. Don't be around it. And that same truth carries over to those things. And you have to be mature enough, which most people aren't, to be able to make those decisions. You have to be aware of yourself and know yourself mm-hmm. to not do those things.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've never been into drugs at all. I've never even smoked a cigarette. And yeah, I could be around people and it doesn't faze me.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have to know your own weaknesses. I think that's really
just be mature. Really key. That's it. That, I think that's what this conversation boils down to. Be mature in your faith. Be mature in your theology. Grow in it. Don't just stay in one place.
Sure.
And then through those things, you can ask bigger and deeper questions and look for bigger and deeper things in your life.
Yeah.
But if you don't grow, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, if you don't grow, then you're like, oh, that's just wrong.
Yeah.
But it's when you grow, you can, you know.
Do you think that when you don't grow, you're actually becoming weaker?
Yes and no, I guess.
Okay.
I think it depends on the person, you know.
All right. I thought we were going to get into a whole philosophical conversation there, but I appreciate the I don't know.
I mean, because some people, yeah, that's the case. Some people know that's not the case.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I think this has probably been one of the longest, man. I enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, same, man.
Where we at?
I do got to hop on a call at 1:30.
Yeah, let's roll out, man. Thank you for being here. Tell us how we can find you.
Yeah, amigostv.co. That's the website. Everything is through there. YouTube page, Instagram page, all that information. So we got a preaching course out right now. We are also doing team coaching. So we grab, it's four guys and myself right now, and we kind of just simplify life, trying to get it to the best possible so that you can succeed. You don't have to be a Christian or whatever, but like, we want you to win as a leader, as a business person, that, and as well, like, we're getting into preaching coaching, and then we're going to grow the courses that we put out. They won't all cost as much as the preaching course. The preaching course is $150, but we'll put out like $5 courses, $10 courses, and then eventually try to get to subscription base where you're paying, I don't know, $8, $10 a month. Mm-hmm. And every, you know, we're putting out two courses a month on theology, biblical books, stuff like that.
Yeah. Awesome, bro. Well, thank you again for making the drive out here. And hopefully we'll get you back on here.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan.
Another time. All right, bro. Later, brother.
Hey, thank you for listening to the JRC Podcast. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation. If you didn't, I hope you'll give it another chance. If you did, do me a favor and give me a rating and a review on iTunes by going to the JRC Podcast and leaving it there. You can also help by sharing the content. That would mean a lot to me. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, head over to the website, jrcpodcast.com, and you can get in touch with me there. Have a blessed week, and until next time, peace out.